Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 43 of Nerd Pride Radio. 43, AMC's number 43 movie of all time, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Best Picture winner in 43, Casablanca, although Alfred Hitchcock's Shadow of a Doubt is the most highly rated film of 43 by modern critics. On Rotten Tomatoes, the most recent movie with a 43% rating is Old Boy, the weak Spike Lee remake of Chanwook Park's brilliant 2004 Old Boy, while strangely, movie 43 only rates 4%. Weird. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Come on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's probably seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my noggin anymore. And that was my phone. I'm getting a text message, but we'll ignore that crap. So, anyway, our sponsor this week is The Pie Hole, home of the original binary pie. What flavor is binary? It's pie flavored. All right. I am so glad to be back. I was going to pretend that I hadn't really just taken almost a year off of the podcast and pretend like, you know, last episode was just last week and hey, where have you guys been? But I can't really bring myself to do it. I just took a really extended break. I'm sorry about that, but things have been inspiring me lately and it's been building up and I finally realized I have to get back to this. I have to do the podcast again, and I don't know if it'll last. I mean, maybe it'll be this one episode, and I'll take another year off or never come back or who knows what. But for right now, I want to record some episodes, and so that's what I'm going to do. And that brings me right into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week or year, I add it to my master list. And then the best stuff gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record, you lucky dogs. So, first on my master list? All right, it's supposed to be a nerd culture report. And Gonzo would then jump in. But unfortunately, I wrote this 10 months ago. And so, the outline, and I've added some stuff to it, but I'm using the basic outline from 10 months ago. And the outline just says, Nerd Culture Report, Gardner Fox. That's it. All right. Gardner Fox was a comic book artist, and apparently, he had his hand in just about every comic line, decades ago, and just was involved in all sorts of really, really cool stuff. And apparently, when I wrote this down, I knew this well enough that I could just spew it out off the top of my head, but I don't remember it now anymore. So, I decided to go refresh myself, see what I could see on Gardner Fox, and see if it was worth my time to bring it back and do a full nerd culture report on it. But instead, what I wound up doing was I started looking at Gardner Fox, and it took me down the rabbit hole. And then this is where I'll insert some music or sound effect for Down the Rabbit Hole, because...
No time to say goodbye. Hello, I'm late.
Because that's what I do every time I go on Wikipedia for anything. I go search for Gardner Fox, and it takes me down this long, winding trail into a million things that I didn't even know I didn't know. And I always have a good time doing it. And this time, I'm going to share, as I've done before, my journey down the rabbit hole with you guys. So I started off looking up Gardner Fox. And among the many, many things that he did, one of them is he wrote Crom the Barbarian, a comic book. And I'm thinking to myself, wait. Crom the Barbarian? You mean like Crom, the god from Conan? Okay. And so I started thinking to myself, well, which came first? Was Was Gardner Fox stealing the name Crom from his obvious inspiration from Conan the Barbarian? Or is there some chance, because I have no idea, when Howard wrote the Conan books, is it possible that Crom the Barbarian was some early, early comic and Howard took inspiration from that? Turns out that they were contemporaries, but not by much. And holy crap, did you know that Robert E. Howard died at age 30? Are you kidding with me? He created Khal the Conqueror, Solomon Kane, and of course Conan the Barbarian, and then he went and killed himself at age 30. But apparently, Crom the Barbarian from Gardner Fox wasn't until 1950-ish, and Conan, which had the first mention of the god Crom, came from almost 20 years before that. So, in fact, what I find out, following the Wikipedia links, is that Howard probably got the name of Crom from the Celtic gods, or Celtic if you pronounce it that way, the Celtic gods Crom Dubh or Crom Cruach. And I, again, pronunciation, not my thing, correct me if I'm wrong, which those two gods, Crom Dubh, Crom Cruach, may or may not have been the same dude in Celtic legend. Howard had a thing for Celtic history, and Crom Cruach was a god whose name literally translates to bent corn harvest. Dark Crom, Black Crom, Dark Harvest. Basically, as the days are getting shorter, as it's getting to the dark time of the year, the corn is ready for harvest. That's all it refers to. Although, Dark Crom, what a badass name, am I right? Okay. But it just refers to the time of year. So, and that time of year in Celtic culture, Samhain, which also, by the way, great frickin' name. This is not from Wikipedia, but Samhain was the name of one of my favorite villains from Villains and Vigilantes, the really, really crappy game from, superhero crappy game, from 30-something years ago. And while the game itself was not all that great, there was a villain book that I owned, and Samhain was this. It was like if you took Jason from the Friday the 13th movies and just made him into a supervillain. That's what Samhain was. And he was really cool. I always loved him. But anyway, Samhain, one of the four seasonal festivals in, Gaelic or Celtic culture. Samhain, right around harvest time. All right. That's the start of winter. Imbolc in spring. Beltane. Okay. I've heard of Beltane, just like I've heard of Samhain, but, Beltane, was the summer festival. And then Lugnas, I have no idea how to pronounce that. Lugnasad? I'm just going to guess something in Gaelic that I can't pronounce. That's the start of autumn or fall. But I noted, as I'm reading through the seasonal festivals in Wikipedia, I noticed that one of the signs of Imbolc is the flowering of the blackthorn. Ooh, once again, cool name. And yeah, it's just a plant with a cool name. I dig that. I don't know what blackthorn is. I've heard references to the blackthorn bush, blackthorn in general, but I don't have no idea what blackthorn actually is. So, let's follow that link. Turns out blackthorn is a thorny shrub that has small, plum-like fruits on it. All right. So, it's in the same family as, plums, cherries, peaches, stuff like that, which I didn't know plums, cherries, and peaches were all in the same family, but I do now. But that dark little plum-like fruit of the blackthorn is known as a sloe. S-L-O-E, slow. Oh, wait a minute. Now, I'm reading really fast here, and so I'm not making this connection, but eventually, as I'm reading up on it and reading up on the slow, is that the same slow, the slow berry slow, is that the same slow that they use to make slow gin? Is that where the name slow gin comes from? Because I know slow gin, and sure enough, it is. That is exactly where slow gin comes from, or at least where the original slow gin came from. Modern slow gin could very well just be a bunch of cheap imitation flavors. But that's not the point. Slow gin, when mixed with orange juice, is my wife's favorite alcoholic beverage. So, pretty cool. However, myself, since a particular Halloween 5 years ago, I can't drink slow gin. Can't touch it anymore. But, you know who did like slows, though? Otzi. That's right. The 5,300-year-old mummy found in the Alps way back in 1991. He had slows among his stomach contents. So, there's my connection. Again, following Wikipedia, down the rabbit hole. And so I get to Otzi, and I know all about him, and I've read up on him before. And so I'm hoping, because I'm like, 5,300 years ago. And I started this whole thing by looking at Crom the Barbarian, Conan the Barbarian, from the Hyborian age or whatever it is that Howard called it back then. And I thought, oh, I could bring this whole thing full circle by making Atsi a contemporary of Crom and Conan, and boom, way to wrap up my rabbit hole, right? But it turns out that having died in 3300 BC, Atsi is at a minimum at least 1,000 years too late to be a contemporary of Crom or Conan had they actually existed. So too bad, but that was my fun trip, and I'm so happy to share it with you guys. Oh, I can't believe it's so nice to be back. One of the other things I'm doing is I'm going to try and do less editing of this podcast. I don't know. You guys may or may not be aware, 'cause as I've been listening to old episodes of the podcast, kind of in preparation for this, I've been building up for it. And so I've listened to about the last 12 episodes of the show, just kind of remembering what my rhythm was like, going through all the memorized standard bits that I do every time, that kind of stuff. And I realize, whether or not you guys can hear it, I really can. I edit a lot. That if I screw up, if I flub a line and I flub it really bad, it is not uncommon for me to, I just leave a pause there in the recording so that later as I go back through, I look for any of these large flat spaces. And if I see that, I'm like, oh, it must have flubbed the line there. So I'll drop in, cut out the flubbed line, pick it up where I repeated it, and just kind of hook it all together. So it makes me look way more talented than I really am because I remove as many of my errors as possible, which does not, by the way, in any way diminish the number of Mike was wrong events I get. But I try. And I realize I don't like those edits. I think, the editing, I don't like the way they sound to me, because every now and then I bring the words together just a little too close, or the pause just sounds awkward. My tone of voice changes from one to the next. And I don't like that. And additionally, all that editing, all that extra work means that that's more work and more time to get an episode out. And I realized that I would be more willing to do these if they were less work. So, I mean, that was one of the magics when we did the Animal Cast years ago, me and my brother, is we had a service that basically recorded our conversation on the phone. And so we would both call into the number. We said, you know, talk away for an hour, hour and a half. And then when we got done, really, my brother took the audio recording down off the website. He slapped our intro music onto the beginning of it, and then that was it. That was the entire process. There was no editing. He did do some editing. He had to go through, especially in the early days. I had a bad microphone, and we had tried a lot of different ways to do it. So he was constantly working to try and bring the levels up or levels down and even things out. But ultimately, it got to the point where he could really just go and do some real basic overview stuff and then slap on the music, and then we could put it out. And I thought, wow, how nice would that be? It's a little harder when I'm running solo like this. But I am going to try it. Which means that I may do things like ramble on like this for a little while, and you guys are just going to deal with that. And also may mean that my transitions from one section to the next, I don't know if they're going to sound better or worse, but usually, again, in my old method, I would get the end of a section like here. I'm done with my down the rabbit hole bit. And so now as I'm looking down on my sheet, my very next one is my gaming table. And so normally I would just end my down the rabbit hole bit or whatever segment I'm doing, leave that long pause in there, and then suddenly pick up with the intro for the gaming table as if I've been talking fluidly through all the time. And I'm not going to do that. So my transitions like this one are going to start to get a little awkward, but I'll get better at it because it's just a matter of practice, right? All right. I appreciate you guys putting up with me. This is cool. But that does mean, hey, it's time to visit my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I'm here to share it with you. And I am so excited. I can't even express it, all right? Did you notice the title of the episode? Of course you did, because you had to download it. It's called Level Up. Level Up, baby. And why am I so excited about that? Because I've actually been playing in an honest-to-God campaign with a bunch of adults where I'm playing as a player. I don't even have to game master this thing. And for the first time in my 33 years of gaming. For the first time in my 33 years of role-playing, I, Mike Jones, as a player, have a character that leveled up. You don't know how monumental this is for me. Oh my goodness. And now that seems bizarre. Mike, you've been playing for 33 years. How have you never leveled up ever? I've never had, in fact, I don't even think in games, and this is, you know, I say level up because we're playing Pathfinder, but I don't even think in any of the various other games we've played, I don't think I've ever gotten far enough into a game to earn karma that I need to spend. You know, if I was playing Shadowrun or some other game, or, you know, I don't think I've ever been, God darn it with this phone. Hang on a minute. All right, sorry to pause that there. That was totally worth it, though. The phone scams are just coming fast lately, aren't they? This was someone who is calling me up, and it's a pre-recorded message that says, "Thank you for being a valued Verizon customer. You have been awarded a $44 credit off your next billing statement. In order to claim this, just visit 44verizon.com." And it's in, and I hate to be stereotypical about this, but it is in a really, really thick, thick accent that to me implied, Eastern Europe or potentially, Middle Eastern, somewhere in that region, but who knows for sure. I'm not an expert on accents, but, 44verizon.com. Yeah, I'm sure that's legitimate. Oh my God. Okay. Which, by the way, is nothing compared to the unbelievably ballsy string of calls we got, what was it, about 2 weeks ago? And everybody was getting these, so you guys probably ran across these too. But we must have gotten three or four different calls from someone, almost always with an accent, which again, doesn't necessarily mean anything, but just scammers are more often, scammers of this type are more often not local. They would just call the house and go, "Hey, this is blah, blah, blah security company, and we've noticed some really dangerous problems with your internet. So, we're going to go ahead and fix this up for you. All you have to do is log into this website, give us your credit card number. Really? I mean, just ballsy. Just straight up call your house and go, "Hey, here's the problem. Here's how you fix it." And I actually know somebody that it worked on, somebody that I work with, and she came to me just about in tears the next day because she realized afterwards it was a scam. But, oh man, just horrible, horrible people. So anyway, that's what that interruption was. Back to where I left off. So yeah, I've never leveled up. I've never been in a position to spend karma or to do character improvements of any sort because I've just, in all my time, I'm always the game master. And I've been through the level up process with my players. I've done this millions of times. But for myself, I've never played anything more than, I mean, maybe two or three sessions would be about my maximum. I remember playing, Calamar, the palace guard who found out that he was actually the long lost king and, something. Anyway, it was a D&D game that I played with a bunch of deadheads, back in college. And that was one of my most fun times as a player because it actually went on for two or three sessions. But then the game kind of fizzled out and I never did level up in that one, but I've just never had a chance to level up. So let me start from the beginning. We wound up, a few months ago, we started talking about Pathfinder online and how, God, you know, we should really get a game together. We should really do this. And God bless him, DM Darks got up to the plate and he said, "Hey, you know what? Let's do this. I will run a game. I will run a Pathfinder game for you guys. We'll all have a great time." And so that's what we're doing. And we're playing on a website called Roll20, roll20.net, which so far, really, really spectacular. We've had a few issues with the audio and the visual stuff. The Skyping portion of it. It's not Skype, it's whatever they're using. But to actually get audio from other players and you get everybody's faces on camera, if you want to see what everyone else is doing, you can watch them. I turned that part off. And there's been some problems with it. It took us a while for everyone to kind of settle in with what settings work for them. And for me personally, I think it was really just a computer issue with me. I had some real trouble for about 2 weeks. But that's all beside the point. You know what? I'm getting bogged down in technical details and getting away from the enthusiasm of we're playing Pathfinder. And in fact, we're playing Rise of the Rune Lords, one of the original Paizo adventure arcs, whatever they call them. And We're playing Rise of the Rune Lords, which I own, and not only do I own, but I actually ran my kids through the first book. So, and so as we're playing, I can vaguely remember some of the stuff that happened, but not others, and we didn't hit everything, and Darx is putting a little spin on it sometimes, and so, it's all new to me, really. Even when I do remember stuff, I don't give a crap. Because it's not about the adventure. At this point, while I'm into the characters that are being presented to us and I'm into the conflict, I mean, we get to kill a bunch of goblins and there's some really cool NPCs around and some, interesting, fascinating family stuff going on and all this stuff. It's not about that. It's just, I don't know how to express it. It turns out that I am a drama queen role player. I really am. We had done some Method 1 character generation, just playing around. And I talked to you about Method 1 characters on the podcast ages ago. But essentially with Method 1, you just roll 3 6-sided dice, and whatever number you come up with, there's no modifications, no anything. You just roll 3 dice 6, and then you write that down for strength. And then you roll 3 dice 6, and you write that one down for dexterity. And you just write them down all in order to get all 6 of your abilities for Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder or whatever you're playing. And then after you have all 6 abilities written down, then it's your job to make a character work out of whatever numbers you just got. Doesn't matter how horrible they were. Doesn't matter how weird and imbalanced they seem. You make a working character out of that. And I love this concept. And so one of my favorites of my Method 1 characters that we had played around with in this thread was a half-orc. She started off as a half-orc sorcerer. A hyperactive, a completely ADHD, off-the-wall sorcerer. So I was playing her as my intention was a 15-year-old girl, which 15 for half-orcs is technically adult. So, but still, 15-year-old girl as a sorcerer and just completely spastic, off-the-wall hyper. And this sort of evolved as I am developing this character. This is what I wanted to play. As I developed the character, I realized that, oh, you know what? I have her as a sorcerer, but I keep trying to give her musical ability. I realize I'm playing a bard. If I'm going to play a bard, I just should make a bard. And so that's what I did. And it's the greatest character I've ever made in my life. Her name is Dothan. And again, this is the wank portion of the podcast where I sit here and describe my character to you. I'm not going to go into a bunch of detail, but suffice to say that I am playing a 15-year-old girl who is a bard. And so it's her job to play the fiddle and sing and entertain. And oh, by the way, she's just hyper as all crap. And so immediately everyone said, oh, wow, so you're playing Taylor Swift, huh? Oh, yeah, kinda. You know what? I'd like to deny it, but I can't. And so, we've done 8 sessions so far. I mean, we've actually stuck to this. A bunch of 40-something, 30-something, 40-something dudes. Not just dudes. Stop that. Cause we've got, it's me and Darks and Eliahad and Jeff Hawes. Oh, Jeff Hawes is in. That's awesome. Talvin and Stan. But there's also Rika and Lucy. And so we've got, some females in here too. It's like we're actually adults. It's weird. We've had other people who, have been in for a session or two, but haven't made it back yet. And so it's hard to know who's going to be a long-term player and who's not sometimes. But I'm just having the best time. This is really, at this point, this portion of the podcast is just for all of you guys who are playing in that game, because you guys are awesome. Oh my God, we're having so much fun. I needed to make an actual point here. I wasn't just here to just babble on about how much fun I'm having, although that's a large part of it. The point is, I've never spent this much time as a player, and I didn't realize what a drama queen player I was. That I'm the kind of person who likes really getting into character and doing the soliloquies and doing the back and forth. I mean, you know, hey, my apologies to you, Jeff, but when we played last time with you, and I know this was, you know, over a dozen years ago, but when we played with you, Jeff, and your character came out and had, I mean, you were in character. You were right there on the edge of stuff. And there was something really impressive about it. But also at the same time, it wasn't the style that we were ever used to. And so afterwards, it's like, oh God, is he going to make another speech? Oh geez. not in a horrible way, but just, it was just so odd for us. But now that I'm on the player side of it, I'm like, oh yeah, no, that's exactly who I want to be. Oh, this is exactly right. And so, again, playing as a 15-year-old girl, there's been at least two or three sessions where, I've ended up having a teenage temper tantrum on people, modeling it somewhat after my own kids and stuff I've been through with them and things I know of their friends and stuff like that. But throw a tantrum, storm off in a huff, maybe some crying and hugging to finish the whole thing out. And it's just, I'm having a great time. So I don't even know if I have a point, to all of you, because a lot of times I like to end on a point and give you guys recommendations and stuff. Go play more Pathfinder. Do some role playing. I don't know. I'm just having a great time. This is the best game ever. And it keeps going. We play every other Thursday night, roughly. I mean, I would guess we play two or three times a month. And we're just doing a great job with it. So I will keep you guys posted because I can't stop thinking about it. I am so engrossed in this game. And the best part about it, again, playing with a group of adults, being able to play at an adult level, that is, being able to have conversations and role-playing moments that are about character and emotion and stuff that I mean, my kids do some of that, and they certainly get into the games, but it's difficult for them to separate themselves and their own personal motivations from those of their character or from just, oh, what would be cool and cinematic in this moment. And it's not that as adults we don't do some of that too. We certainly do. But it's the idea that I have a character who walks into a situation, and I wish I could give a specific example of this. I'll try and note some of them later because, I'm going to keep talking about this. But the idea that I have my character walk into a situation in the game, and she's confronted with something, and as a player, as me, I know what's going on. It's pretty obvious to me what's going on, and I can kind of puzzle all this out and figure out what to do. But I realized that from her point of view, this is really confusing, or this is really horrifying, or she doesn't understand what's happening, even though I do. And it's like reading a good book or watching a really good movie, and you're just right there with the character. And so when it comes along, even if you know what's happening, that gut punch to the character is still something that you can feel on a visceral level. And it's just really exciting. This is what role-playing is. When I say that, I don't mean this is everything role-playing is supposed to be, because there's a million ways to do role-playing, and I do probably 7 or 8 of them myself. So there's no wrong way to do it. But man, this is experiencing at a level that is different for me. And again, I've been role-playing for a long, long time, and some of you are going to go, well, duh, this is why I role-play, is I always get that. Well, I've never done that before, all right? Or I have, but I've definitely had a little taste of it. This is the first time in an ongoing sense that I've been able to really, really get into this. You know what? Steve, if you're listening, and I'm sure you're not, but if you're listening, I am so sorry, man. I killed your dogs. This is all D&D related, guys. Way back in 1987, 86, me and my brother and Steve were playing a D&D game. I was the game master, of course, and Steve had 2 elven dogs that traveled with his character. They were his animal companions. I don't even remember what his character was. Although, I'm pretty sure this was the campaign where my brother was playing a black elf and Steve was a halfling. And Steve had 2 elven dogs that traveled with him. And we had a very dramatic scene in which, I mean, cliche, obvious, you can see this sort of thing coming, is that in this dramatic spot, Steve is on his last legs, he's about to go down, someone is firing whatever at him, probably just a plain old arrow, but Steve is going to die, and the dog, one of the dogs, leaps in front of the arrow and takes the shot for him, whatever it was. But it was something magical, because it wound up killing the dog. I mean, nearly instantly, the dog died in Steve's arms. And at the time, Steve was really broken up about it. I mean, really, this was intense for him. Steve cried over his dogs because we'd been playing this game for a year or more. They'd worked their way up through several levels to this point. The dogs had been with them forever. And I remember my brother and I, I'm not sorry for killing the dog. I mean, it was a great role-playing moment and a great scene. But afterwards, my brother and I were kind of harsh. We really made fun of you a lot on that one, Steve. We really picked at you for your attachment to your pretend dogs in a pretend game. But I get it now. I get it a lot. And so, I feel really bad, dude. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the horrible, horrible things that 16-year-old me did to your elven dogs. That was just wrong. All right. But enough of my gaming table. I've really gone on long enough. Let's take a look at the list. And the next one is, you know what? I don't know what the next one is. Oh, I know. Let's do something completely different.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah, this is just stuff I don't have a category for yet. So, quick. All right, which one's taller? Don't think about it. The Statue of Liberty or the Eiffel Tower? Which one? Okay, I'm not even gonna give you time to think about it. You know which one's taller? The Eiffel Tower. You know, by how much, though? Here's the thing, because in my mind, you know, when I picture the Statue of Liberty, I picture the Eiffel Tower, I picture them as I've seen them in movies. They both seem pretty damn tall. Probably close, but, you know, the Eiffel Tower's a building, and the Statue of Liberty's a person, so let's go with the tower being taller, right? The Eiffel Tower is 1,000 feet tall. It's actually over 1,000 feet tall. 300 and whatever meters for you non-Americans. And, but 1,000 feet tall, and the Statue of Liberty, from the ground to the tip of her torch, 300 feet. All right, so the Statue of Liberty, including its base pedestal and everything, is only a third the height, not even a third the height of the Eiffel Tower. And more than that, half of her height, half of the Statue of Liberty, is that base. That base is 150 feet tall, and then the statue itself is another 150 feet. So if you took that base away, she'd be a sixth the size of the Eiffel Tower. In fact, if she puts her arm down, because, you know, you gotta imagine the Statue of Liberty, if she came to life and started walking around as if it was a Ghostbusters movie, imagine her walking around, and the top of her head, if she put her arm down, the top of her head would only be about 12 stories high, which is huge for a person, but really tiny compared to, I mean, I have a 12 story building here in town. It's our tallest building here in town, but I have a 12 story building right here for reference. And if I imagine the Statue of Liberty being, you know, putting her arms down, standing there, you know, as our battle statue ready to fight whatever evil ghosts are coming through, and I picture the top of her head at the top of that building, I'm like, that is not tall enough. Man, that seems weird. Why was I thinking that she was so much bigger than that? And I'll tell you why. Because I didn't know this. Movies, every time that you need the Statue of Liberty in a movie, such as Ghostbusters 2, was it? Yeah. Whenever you need the Statue of Liberty in a movie, for whatever reason, they always make her in the movies bigger than she actually is. So she's already this massive statue, this larger-than-life 150-foot-tall woman. And they make her even taller than that because, for some reason, in everyone's minds, she seems big. She seems big. If you made her actual size, it's like she's not quite impressive enough to be doing these things in the movie that we need. And so, therefore, they make her even larger in the movie. So in Ghostbusters, they had to really blow her up to get her head high enough that she's, you know, towering over some of these buildings. Because if you're walking around Manhattan riding the Statue of Liberty, she's going to be dwarfed by most of those buildings. I mean, she would be, compared to the skyscrapers she was walking among, she would be dwarfed by them. You're not seeing her head, you know, the top of her head poking up above some of these buildings, because that's just not happening. And that's not impressive enough. So Hollywood has resized her for us so that at least as Americans, I don't know if this applies to the rest of the world, but at least as Americans, we have this really exaggerated sense of liberty. If that's not symbolic or anything. So I just thought that was fascinating. But anyway, that was a really quick one. Let's see what else is next here.
And now for something completely different.
Wow, another one? Really? Okay. That's, again, more stuff I don't have a category for. And this one, I'm not going to go on really long about this one because it's political stuff, and I don't want to be a political podcast, but First off, have you listened to Hardcore History? Because I've talked about Hardcore History, and I've told you that you have to listen to Hardcore History. You have to. It's a podcast by Dan Carlin. It is absolutely amazing. If you have not been listening to it, I am really, really disappointed in you. You obviously like podcasts because you're listening to me. And so therefore, if you like putting interesting stuff that makes you smarter into your ear holes, then Hardcore History is absolutely for you. Listen to it. The guy is amazing. Go back, get his entire back catalog, listen to everything you can get your hands on. He's wonderful. But Hardcore History, Dan Carlin, in addition to the history podcast, he also does another podcast, a political podcast called Common Sense, which he's been doing for years, longer than Hardcore History. It's the same sort of stuff he did when he was an actual radio personality back on terrestrial radio before he converted it all to podcast. And, I have always kind of shied away from listening to Common Sense for whatever reason. The people that I've known of who have told me, have you listened to his Common Sense stuff? Or the people who quote material from him. I didn't know if he was going to be some extreme partisan or some, because I don't like listening to that kind of stuff. I just don't. But finally it occurred to me that, look, I've been listening to Hardcore History for years, and I love Hardcore History, and everything the man says in Hardcore History is incredibly well researched. He is very knowledgeable on his topics, and when he presents something, he presents it in a very fair way. He presents all of his Hardcore History stuff. He is willing to tell you that, look, here's what history looks like as best as we can tell. And when there's conflicts, look, here's the sources. Here's the sources. And some of them say this and some of them say this. But you know what? Here's the interpretation that I like and why. But if you subscribe to something else, that's all right, because, you know, you got to understand that there's other things out there. So he's very fair and even-handed, and he presents all sides of an issue if at all possible. And he, you know, so I thought, you know what, I'll give Common Sense a try, because if he uses the same approach towards politics that he uses towards his history research, then, I mean, how can I argue with that? And I gotta tell you, it's overwhelming, really. His Common Sense podcast is overwhelming. I wound up listening to the most recent three or four episodes, and I'm hooked. I'm absolutely hooked, because he does. He approaches politics the same way he does history, in that everything is really well researched. He has his facts straight. He knows what issues are important to him, and he focuses on them, and he tries to present all sides of the issue, and he really is nonpartisan, by the way. That's not just a line. He's truly nonpartisan, very independent. And he has his issues. Civil liberties is his issue. He is that's the center of everything he does, is defense of civil liberties, which is amazing, because defending civil liberties is something that is really hard to argue with. I mean, in the movie, An American President, all right, and in the end, and I don't know if you've seen American President, but I've quoted from it, and in fact, I think I may even have quoted this portion of the speech too. At the end of the movie, he finally, Michael Douglas, as the American President, comes forward and he addresses his opponents, and he says, you know, because his opponent has been accusing him of being a card-carrying member of the ACLU, and the president's response to his opponent, which would never work in real life, but in an Aaron Sorkin film comes off brilliantly, is he addresses his opponent and says, yeah, I am a card-carrying member of the ACLU. I have my card right here. Of course I'm a member of the ACLU. The big question is, why aren't you? Why aren't you, Bob, is what he says. This is an organization whose sole purpose is to defend the civil liberties, the constitutional liberties of all Americans. Why wouldn't you, as a politician sworn to uphold the Constitution, why wouldn't you be in support of that? All right. And that, again, that's overly dramatic, and that's something that wouldn't work in a real political debate situation, just because of the way our politics is structured. But it's a really good point. I mean, civil liberties are huge. Civil liberties, to me, are huge. The freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of thought in general, the press, the ability to congregate, protest, these are gigantic things. And that is what Dan Carlin is out to defend. And it is really moving. And I don't agree with everything Dan Carlin says. But man, that guy is persuasive. I wound up after listening to those first three or four episodes, I was so hooked. I have now, over the course of about 2 or 3 weeks, I've listened to everything that he put out for Common Sense for the last year and a half. And, I've fried my brain on it. It's really overwhelming. And so I enjoy Dan Carlin. I enjoy his Common Sense podcast. It is great food for thought. And it has changed my take on a lot of things, changed the way, I'm absorbing a lot of the information around me, and I just find it interesting. And so I highly recommend it. It's something, in fact, it's one of the reasons that, just one, but one of the reasons why I'm doing the podcast again. There's actually several reasons I'm deciding to come back to the podcast. One, I need the podcast. I have to. I have to talk to you guys because I love stuff. That's really all this podcast is a love letter to all the things that I love. I mean, it really is. All the things that I find cool in life, I just want to share, and I want to be there and just get other people involved with them and get other people excited about the same things I am. So that's one. Two, it's this Pathfinder game. Oh man, if I haven't talked about how much I love playing Dothan, the 15-year-old bard girl in Pathfinder, let me repeat, I love this game. And again, this podcast is really, I mean, what am I, 40% role-playing games on this podcast? Love playing Pathfinder. And so again, I had to come out and share this with you guys. I had to get motivated to do gaming stuff again, and this is part of doing gaming stuff for me. Three, my youngest son is starting a video podcast that is going to be hopefully uploaded to YouTube. I'll share more information about it. I don't want to give anything away, but he decided, man, I'm going way off topic, but it doesn't matter. He decided that he wants to be a chemist when he grows up. He's 7 years old and he wants to be a chemist. He thinks chemistry is fascinating. And so, you know, people humoring him, they got him these chemistry sets for Christmas, and so he's been doing science experiments. And we've had some that we've done at home together, the homemade lava lamp and stuff like this. And, you know, everyone's done Coke and Mentos, and these are fun little science things. And these science experiments, these kits that he's gotten, and they're just, you know, store-bought science kits. It's not like buying the chemistry set like when I was a kid. Man, when I was a kid, I mean, they gave you a box of chemicals, a box of dangerous chemicals with instructions on how to mix them to make things work. It's like getting that frickin' wood-burning kit when you were a kid. Like, literally, a kit that just gives you a torch to burn wood with in your living room. That's what my chemistry set was when I was a kid. Well, his is some very controlled experiments that let you do some really basic chemistry things, but it's doing them in a way that is, A, entertaining, like the first one that he did we've recorded the video for it, and we just have to edit it and get it posted now. But the first one was he made a rubber ball. Right? He had the materials here, and he follows the procedures, and he narrates it all to the camera, and he makes a super ball, a little bouncy rubber ball. And then he demonstrates it. And then most important to him is, and most important to me, is not only does he get to make the ball, but then the instructions give this whole lecture about why the rubber ball works, what makes it bounce, talks about elasticity. And he was so excited to get the science behind it, and not only to get the science behind it, but to explain it to the camera, to explain it to an audience, and tell people that, hey, look what I made, but here's why it works. And he was so thrilled doing this that I thought, man, yeah, you know what? I got to get back to sharing what I love, because this is cool. So I'm hoping that his first video turns out well. It is really rough. Oh man, it's rough, because he's 7 and we can give him suggestions and go, hey, you know, maybe you want to try this, or maybe you want to do things in this order. But he was really patient with having to film things, you know, 7 or 8 times over. And he's also, his most exciting thing is he really wants to get like 10 episodes in. He hasn't even finished and put out his first episode, but he can't wait to get 10 episodes in, so he'll have enough bloopers for a blooper reel. Cause he knows he's screwed up a lot, and we've got it all on camera, and he loves it. but it's tough because he gets to make the final editorial decisions. He is the one who ultimately decides that this is the script he wants to use, and this is how he wants to present it, and here's the joke he wants to make, and, ooh, it'll be funny if I make a face like this at this point. And there's some of those that, yeah, you know what, I don't quite agree with you, kid, but, hey, it's your business. It's your podcast. It's your, you do it. I want you to do it, and you figure out what works for you. And he's doing it. And so I'm really proud of him. It's really cool. But so anyway, it was, hey, I need to podcast. B, I've been gaming and I need to share my games. C, my kid is doing a podcast. I can't let him get ahead of me. Oh man, that's right. I forgot how much I love this. And then D, and this is where I started from originally. The final reason is, Dan Carlin inspired me. He had a really rough patch about 6 months ago where, go back and listen to his stuff if you're interested in the full story. But essentially he's doing a political podcast where he is, pushing, a line of thought that is not part of the mainstream right now. That is just not, doesn't even get recognized in the normal political process anymore. And so for him, it was a matter of, why am I even doing this? Why am I bothering to do the things that I do? And he decided that it was time for him to put up or shut up, and that he was going to take some action to try and actually affect change. And it didn't do what he wanted it to do, but he had other positive results that came out of it that he realized and shared with us, the listeners, that he can make a difference as a podcaster. And it inspired me because, you know, part of it is I've been doing this podcast for 3 years now, and I mean, really sporadically. This is episode 43 in 3 years, so doesn't average out really well. But after 3 years, it's not like I was building up a giant audience. You know, I built up an audience. I had my loyal listeners who, I mean, most of you are just my friends who have been on the website with me, and you were fans of the Animal Cast, and you were friends with me back then, and even before the Animal Cast. And so I've got, you know, the 20 or 30 people that I know listen because I know them. They talk to me all the time. That's my core followers. I know them. And I would occasionally get some flashes that there's other people out there listening, but I'm not getting a lot of feedback from people outside that core, which is fine. I'm not begging anyone to write in or doing. Although, you know, hey, if you want to come sign up for the forums, you want to join us, I would love to have you there. Or if you want to send me an email, and I'm actually better about my email now, if you want to send me an email and send me just Podomatic entries or some other feedback or whatever, I am thrilled to get it. I would love to hear from you guys out there. But also, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I'm not members of any of their forums, and I don't send them emails, and I don't get involved in that way, but I love the podcasts, and I love listening to them. And so I know I've got some of those listeners out there, or I had them. I've probably lost them all in the intervening year. But I've never had a big audience, and I've never, other than, you know, pimping my podcast on a few websites, I've never really made a big deal about going out and trying to drum up listeners and trying to commercialize this or make it something that I could, you know, eventually make a living off of or something like that. That's never really been my goal. And so, you know, especially when you've been away from it for a while, yeah, you start to wonder, why am I bothering? What am I doing? And Dan Carlin reminded me that, that, you know what, it makes a difference. Even if you're not seeing it, you don't know who's listening. You don't know who's out there. You don't know who may be inspired by something you say. You don't know whose lives may be affected or what actions they may take as a result. But everything you do makes a difference. And what I try and do here, as I've said, I'm trying to share things that I love, and I'm trying to inspire people and just, I don't know, just put my positivity out there. I love this. I love doing this. I gotta remember that, and I gotta keep going with it. It's, you know, it takes a little bit of time and it takes a little bit of work, but it's worth it. All right. I apologize for all this sloppy mess now. I have not been terribly focused this episode because I knew it was going to be coming back, and I knew it was going to be a lot of diversion to kind of explain myself and where things are going. But you know, hey, you know my pattern. It's all going to tighten up over the next few episodes, and I'm having a great time anyway. So I don't even care. But having done all of that, I think, oh my goodness, are we at 50 minutes already? Here I was thinking I didn't have enough material. I mean, I've really done very little, but I've babbled on about it forever. I guess I've got to hurry up quick and get to the badass movie quote of the week. God, see, I did it. I did it there. All right. I'm going to start this one over again because I said badass movie quote of the week and then immediately paused. I stopped and started leaving this huge blank space there, even though there's no music to insert, there's no setup to do, there's no anything. I can just go straight into the movie quote, and yet I left this huge pause because that's what I've always done. After I do a big announcement of a segment, I always leave this giant pause there so I can go in and do some editing later. I gotta not do that. All right, let's try this again. The badass movie quote of the week. Much better. The quote is, you guys have probably all seen this from the previews. It's not like this is any kind of a secret. But Batman says, "I only work in black or very, very dark gray." End quote. Yeah, that is Will Arnett as Batman in the new Lego movie. I love that quote. I loved it from the commercials. It was just as funny when I saw it on the screen. We went as a family to see the Lego movie, and it's as awesome as you think it's going to be. It really is. Wonderful time. They played off of all sorts of... It's just a good movie, and in the end, had a sweet message, and it was just fun. It's a lot of fun, and the jokes are nonstop. This movie is absolutely frenetic. I am excited for it to come out on video or streaming or whatever so that I can watch it again sometime in the future, because I'm not going to go back to the theater for it, but I would love to watch it again so I can catch some of the stuff that I missed the first time, because it's clever, it's smart, it's fun. And another thing that came out of that, everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome. All right, that song, I saw the movie several days ago. That song will not leave my head. The song is in the movie. The song is intended to be a song that is pop crap. It is intended to be a mass-produced junk song, and that's how they describe it. They make fun of it in the movie as being this worthless conformist kind of, you know, just, you know, you're what it is. And yet, it does its job really well because I can't get that song out of my head. We wake up in the mornings, everyone's getting ready for school, getting into the shower, getting your stuff together, and someone wants to be a little bit grumpy. Hey, just start singing. Everything is awesome. And they have to sing along. And well, except the 7-year-old who will consistently sing that everything is gruesome, which he needs some more lyrics to go with that, because I think that would be a cool way to take that song. Anyway. That song, just unbelievably catchy. The catchiest song ever, ever, ever. But the Lego movie, you should see it. But you guys know what happens. After I do the badass movie quote of the week, it's time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Well, send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, by a private message in our forums, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Oh, see, I have to roll down now. Darn it, I wasn't prepared. See, if I had paused, I would have been prepared for this. You send it to me in a private message on our forums, I'll add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is what, Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Was that so tough? I flustered myself. All right. Anyway. I'm sorry. I have completely gone off the rails here. This is where I really should stop and edit this stuff out, but I'm trying not to. I'm going to get better at this. Our first one, R2, is number 9. Number 9 is from Direcat. Direcat says, who is your favorite god from Greek, Roman, Norse, or any other type of mythology? I have a real thing for Norse mythology in general. Not so much as my brother does, but I like Norse mythology. And I don't know, Thor is right up there. I mean, maybe it's because I just watched the Thor movie again the other night. But my favorite god is, and this is really cheating, but I'm going to do it anyway. My favorite god from any of these mythologies is a god called Chahar. And Chahar is a bugbear god that I created for a D&D game many, many years ago. And he is the god of secret information that other people don't want you to find out. He's the god of basically the god of blackmail material, the god of secrets and lies. And he was just fascinating. I loved him as a bugbear god. I put way too much effort into this, by the way, for something that's really just, he's a god for a random NPC character that, you know, the NPC was going to figure into the game. But this bugbear shaman or cleric or whatever role he was playing, was this devious weasel guy. And so I had him worshiping Chahar, the god of secrets. And I got so caught up into it that I spent forever developing this dude, this god. And, really, I mean, I had backstories on how he's interacted with the other gods and how he moves forward and his weapons and his tools and special powers. I had all the stats drawn up for something that really the players would probably never even find out that their opponent was a worshiper of Chahar. That would probably have never come into the game at all. And yet, man, I put a lot of detail into this guy and I love Chahar. He was awesome. So that would be my favorite god from any mythology. Number 42, Zimnipot. Hey, Zim. Zim says, you like carrots? Well, yeah, you know what? I do. I do like carrots. I don't typically like them raw, although I'm getting closer to liking them raw, if that makes any sense. It's weird. I've always liked cooked carrots since I was a little kid, or cut up carrots, as my 7-year-old calls them. Canned, sliced carrots, you know, already cooked, heat them up, they're awesome. I love canned carrots because it's something about the texture. They're perfect. Raw carrots, it's the same flavor generally, a little sharper, but the same general flavor. And yet I don't like raw carrots. The crunch of it really bugs me for some reason. I don't know why. Although in the last year, I've gotten to where, we went to a steak and sushi place the other night. It's a Japanese restaurant where they do the grilling on the table and they have a little show for you and the chef makes a bunch of jokes and flips food out to people so they can catch it. And it's one of those places and pricey, but fun. We had a great time. In fact, we went to the restaurant right after we went and saw the Lego movie. And while we were there, among the vegetables that they threw out onto my plate, because I got the chicken, which was spectacular, but they also came with these grilled stir-fried vegetables that he did. And normally I would just kind of push the vegetables aside, most of them. But boy, when the chef is standing right there, I mean, he's just served you and he's still standing there at the grill pushing out food for other people. It seems almost rude to not at least try them. And so I was eating some of the vegetables. I tried a little bit of everything. And it turned out the carrots, while still being really firm, they weren't raw carrots, but they certainly weren't soft cooked like I'm used to. They were pretty damn good. And I found this in other settings as well, but this was the most recent one that, yeah, you know what? The firmer carrots, the crunchier carrots, I'm getting to where, oh, those are pretty decent. So, carrots are becoming, more palatable for me, if that answers your question, Zim. 93. Hey, it's from Brasky. Brasky says, I talked to the kids today about the Wayback Seat. And they have no idea what I'm talking about. Can you enlighten them on what it is and how it poses a grave danger to eyewear? Oh, yeah, you're funny. All right, first off, the Wayback Seat. It's the third row of seats in a station wagon. And specifically, because if you're in a station wagon, you have the front seats, then you have the back seat, which is the middle row, but you have the back seat, which you call the back seat because in any other car, that's where the back seat would be, is right behind the driver's seat. So it was front seat, back seat, and then the third row was the way back. And we used to fight over who got to sit in the way back because it was awesome. And most specifically, our station wagon had a rear-facing row of way back seats. Oh, that was awesome. I don't even know if you could do a rear-facing row of way back seats anymore. With the seatbelt laws and safety laws the way they are you allowed to turn that third row of seats around? You would think in most collisions, I mean, if you're going a head-on collision, you would think in most collisions you'd actually be safer facing backwards, but I have no idea if that's accurate or not. Makes no difference. We loved riding back there because it was as if you were in a completely separate vehicle. You could be a little bit louder. You're not even facing your parents, so it's not like you have to. Yeah, it was like being completely on your own back there. It was awesome. And the danger to eyewear, He's referring to an incident where we were riding in the way back and had the rear window was down. So the rear window is completely open. And my friend Billy, his mom was driving a van and Billy was in the passenger seat. Because this is back when 7-year-old kids could ride in the passenger seat of a car and not be breaking the law. And they were following right behind us. We were in a residential neighborhood. I mean, I think we were literally half a block from our house. And they're following right behind us, and both cars are moving really slow. And so I'm waving at Billy, and I'm leaning because there's no seatbelts that we cared about. They might have been seatbelts. We didn't use them. And so I'm leaning way out the window of the way back, and you guys can't see it, but I'm waving to demonstrate how I waved then. And so I'm waving to Billy, and we're yelling, and we're laughing. And as we're doing it, my glasses fell off into the road. And then Billy's mom drove over them. And amazingly, didn't hit them. And so, I mean, here we were all panicked and I was about in tears and I ran back to find them and they were just laying on the road and they were fine. So I got my glasses and it was all good. But that's the way back. Nowadays, yeah, my wife drives a minivan. We use the minivan all the time because we have a lot of kids and when we have to carry them and their friends, we need a vehicle. We don't need, you know, the 15 passenger van like my brother's got, but still the minivan comes in handy. 8 seats for 8. We like that. And we actually refer to them as front seat, middle seat, and back seat. So, or sometimes the very back. But we don't use way back anymore. It's weird that we've given up that term. I like way back. Which has absolutely no connection to Peabody and Sherman and the Wayback Machine and their new movie that's coming out, which actually looks kind of cute. I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that I think I might enjoy the new Peabody and Sherman movie. We'll see. But anyway, that's what the way back was. 59 from Stan. Ah, I love you, Stan. All right. If you could vacation on one world from a fantasy novel or movie, which one would it be? Would the answer change if it was just you or if it was the whole family? Once again, I have to slow down because I have to think. If I could vacation on one world from a fantasy novel or movie, I don't know. What movies seem awesome? My mind is not working on this one. Darn it. Part of me wants to just pass this off and say, hey, let's start a thread in the forums and then we can discuss this. Or the other part of me wants to pause, think about it, and then come back and look like I just had a clever answer ready. But I'm not pausing, so therefore, I'm not quite sure what to do with this one. And part of what makes this harder is that it says it's fantasy. So, specifically, we're looking for a fantasy world, not a sci-fi world, because my gut instinct is I want to go sci-fi somewhere where everything is really comfortable. But it's complicated, because if it's from a fantasy novel or movie, those things all have plots that revolve around danger, and usually these worlds are not really safe. I mean, where do I want to go? I think I'm going to go way back. I'm going to go back to my, I'm going to go back to my early reading days, one of the first big fantasy series that I read that I really got into, Anne McCaffrey's Dragon Riders of Pern. I'm going to go back to Pern. Because Pern was, other than the threat of falling thread, Pern was actually a pretty comfortable place. I mean, they had lots of art and theater and frickin' dragons. You could ride dragons. I mean, this was a pretty fancy place. Technically, I know it's a sci-fi setting because it's actually set in the future and it's a human colony on a faraway planet. But you know what? It's a fantasy setting. Just deal with it. It's got dragons in it. Dragon riders, for God's sake. So I'm going to go with Pern. I think that would actually be a lot of fun for a vacation. That actually sounds like a really cool place to hang out. I loved that world. I read the first 3 books. And then maybe I read one of the follow-ups. I know there were more. I must have read all the way through until they found the spaceship. I'm sure I did. Anyway, I read a bunch of them, and then eventually I stopped. I can't remember why. But still, always loved Pern. And no, that does not change if I'm going to bring my family with me. Because if I had decided to go to Eroticon 6 or whatever, then yeah, obviously different answer for my family. But I don't think I would do that. I would prefer to take my family with me. That's what we do with vacations. If I'm gonna take a couple weeks off of work, come on, I want to spend it with my family. So we'll all go together. Number 25 from Mr. Brasky. Do you use a calculator, do you use a calculator that's not on a phone on a regular basis? And can it graph? Okay. I first off don't use calculators in general. Every once in a while, I will use a calculator if one happens to be like, my wife always has a calculator on the back of the bed. Because if she's doing late night grading, she needs to have a calculator at the ready to punch stuff into the computer. Me personally, I use Excel. Virtually any time I need to do any calculating, I either do it in my head, because if I'm away from computers, I'll just do it in my head and get a rough estimate. I enjoy doing that anyway, and I'll just get a really rough estimate. I can't remember ever using a calculator on my phone, and I can't remember last time I used an actual calculator for anything. So I'll either do it in my head, or I'll jot it down on paper quick, or I'm almost always within reaching distance of a laptop or a computer or some device that has Microsoft Excel on it. And then I'll pull up Excel and I have Excel do all my calculations for me, because I just like the format of using it in Excel, because then all my answers are sitting there on the spreadsheet, and I can kind of, as I do with this calculation, the old numbers are still over there, so I can make reference to them. And can it graph? No, I haven't had a graphing calculator in ages. My two oldest sons both have graphing calculators for their various math classes in college and high school. But I don't use a graphing calculator anymore. I haven't in a long, long time. Number 93 from Sirius Paul. Yay, Sirius Paul. Oh, and you know, I don't even think you listen anymore. I hope you do. I hope you tune in when this episode comes out, and I hope you hear this. Because Paul, you have been one of my greatest contributors, but I haven't seen you around for a while. Serious Paul asks, ever been to Prague? Miss Taya has, and she says it's lovely. Oh, I miss Miss Taya. Aw, I wonder what she's doing now. I should go check Facebook. But anyway, I have never been to Prague. I have never been, I've never been outside North America other than, I guess that's not even a fair way to say it. Other than, no, I have, all right, I have been to most of the 50 states. I'm going to guess there's three or four that I've missed, but there's ones that I've either passed through or stopped over. And I don't think we've ever done a layover in Hawaii, but I did do a layover in Alaska for a while. So most of the 50 states. And been to Canada a few times, mostly Montreal, when I was in high school in New York. And I believe I went to Mexico as a baby. That I think I was told that my parents once took a trip across the border and had me with them, but that may be something that I'm making up. I certainly haven't done that as an adult. And, when my folks lived in Japan, I made several trips over to Japan. So I've been to Japan, and once while in Japan, we made a trip to, Korea, to go shopping. So Japan, Korea, Canada, maybe Mexico. That's the extent of my overseas visits. I have heard that Prague is lovely. And I would love to, visit all sorts of places in Europe, but right now, not on my agenda, which is too bad. Number 31. Oh, again from Sirius Paul. Sirius Paul says, how much liberty are you willing to sacrifice in exchange for security? That is fascinating that you would ask that. You must have just heard me talking about Dan Carlin, and thus you've brought this up. And as it turns out, you know what? You guys should go listen to Common Sense by Dan Carlin and form your own opinions on this. But after listening to Dan, not much. I really like the liberties that we have. I like the liberties that are guaranteed in the Constitution, especially the first 10 amendments, and after listening to Dan and reevaluating a lot of my positions, I've always said that I'm not willing to give up liberty for security, or at least not a whole lot of liberty for security, because it's a slippery slope. Unfortunately, I think I, along with the rest of America, have let a lot of our liberties slide, and we really need to back this train up. But, yeah, that's me. I don't want to turn this into a political podcast. I'm not going to go on about this. But go listen to Dan Carlin. If you want to get your political fix, go listen to Dan Carlin or any number of other great political podcasts that are out there. Or at least I'm sure there are other great ones. I don't listen to political podcasts most of the time. Yeah, let's move on. R2? 62. Thank you, R2. Brasky asks, don't you feel that prime numbers are lonely because they just can't relate to other numbers? I mean, really, that's why 4 is the best, right? Because it's the parent of identical twins, 2, and it has so much in common with more than half the other numbers in existence. All right, dude, seriously, I know you want to play out this whole rivalry between your favorite 4 and all other numbers in existence, but the truth is you're wrong. 4 is boring in its perfection. It is, when I say perfection, I mean as in, you know, it unfolds into a perfect square, and then that's what it does. Okay, 2 times 2, 2 plus 2, it's 4. It's 4. It's 2 squared. It's 2. 2, 2, it's dull. There's really not much else to talk about with 4. It doesn't do interesting things for me. Whereas prime numbers, as I've said before, prime numbers are interesting. Prime numbers, individually, I find interesting in how they're used in culture, as well as in mathematics, but also as a set, prime numbers are fascinating because they don't form a pattern. There's no, you know, it's like following out digits of pi. There's no rhyme or reason, seemingly, to the appearance of primes within the set. They just don't, I like primes. I like primes, and you're wrong. How's that? 67. This is Brasky again. Brasky says, in movies, do you like eyes open death or eyes closed death? Neither one is, I don't have a real preference. I like the eyes open death because they seem more dead that way. And when in a movie, shorthand for he's really, really dead is when, hey, they're motionless, unresponsive, and their eyes are still open. That's movie shorthand for, yep, they're definitely dead. Whereas if they go with their eyes closed, you know, it could go either way. It could be the, oh my God, they're dead. Oh, wait, no. They just needed to recover. Oh, miraculously, everything's okay again. How often do you get that scene? And I guess that's the problem with both of them is that the eyes closed death is so often turns into the eyes closed death. Oh, wait, trope. No, they weren't really dead. I hate that. They do that way too often and it's too obvious. But eyes open death. Why does someone always feel a need to close their eyes? That, oh, they're dead. And then you have to reach up and close their eyes. And that's your symbolic, again, it's a trope. It's a symbolic way of, okay, yep, that's the end. That's the finality of their death. And I don't like either of those. You know what? I'm going to go with eyes open death as my favorite if I had to pick. But, I guess there's just no good way to die. Is that really what we're coming down to? Number 68. Is that 360s in a row? That's actually pretty impressive. Okay, it's not really. You know what? I've got to stop doing that. Serious Paul asks, what kind of character class would Wayne Brady play? Wow. Now, this is rough because he submitted this probably, 2 years ago? Because some of these items, you know, wind up sitting on this list for a while. I collect them, and then I roll randomly. And so some of them, you know, some of these on the list could be ones that have been here since the very beginning 3 years ago. I don't think there's many of those left, but it could happen because I get a lot of them. And, hey, it's random choice. So he probably submitted this 2-3 years ago, and he probably submitted it at a point where Wayne Brady was just on the edge of not being relevant anymore. I mean, he still had that music show, but, you know, Whose Line Is It Anyway had gone off the air. Then he had this music thing, and there was talk of him getting a talk show. But Wayne Brady hasn't really done anything in the last few years, and so therefore, he's even less relevant now. But that doesn't stop me from following that pop culture reference anyway. What kind of character class would Wayne Brady play if he were playing Pathfinder, which I assume is what we're talking about here? I think the obvious answer is he's a bard. I mean, Wayne Brady can, I mean, look, He's a charismatic and talented actor who is good with improvising and putting on a role. And so therefore he'd make an excellent role player. So just going by himself and his personality, Wayne Brady as a character is going to be a bard. I mean, he's got the singing, he's got the dancing, he's got the performing and the storytelling, and that just putting it all out there. I really think that's the way to go with Wayne Brady. I think that would be the character class that he would be most comfortable with. Although, I mean, again, he can put on any role he wants. I mean, do you want him to, as long as it's something that has an extreme personality, that's really the big thing. So, you know, if he's going to be a cleric, then he needs to be the overzealous, religious, zealot. All right, way to use that same word twice. You know, or if he's going to be the fighter, then he has to play the big dumb stereotype fighter. He has to get, some extreme character type, you know, that has the quirks that are easily identifiable and that sort of thing. But simple answer, Wayne Brady, bard. There you go, Paul. Number 74. This is going to be the last one. This is from Jeff Hawes. Jeff Hawes says, worst role in a good movie. And then in parentheses, he adds, Kevin Costner's Robin Hood, Keanu in Dracula, Gary Oldman in The Fifth Element, and then he adds, even beyond that, and don't talk to me about Chris Tucker. Okay. Well, you know what? The first thing I'm going to do is talk about Chris Tucker. All right. Worst role in a good movie. I don't know. I don't know if I can do any better than Gary Oldman in The Fifth Element. This is one that I can put out on the boards and ask for other people's opinions, but Gary Oldman is really kind of a standout for me because I love The Fifth Element. I think The Fifth Element's a great film. And yet Gary Oldman's character in it has just horrible, just terrible. I like Gary Oldman. I like him as an actor. But in that particular, thank you, Train. In that particular movie, I don't care for his portrayal of Southern Fried Evil. It just doesn't quite work for me. And, I don't know. It's a little over the top, and his character seems a little pointless because he's not really the big evil. He's just there to kind of, move the plot along in evil's direction when we need him to. But really, I didn't care for him at all. Whereas Chris Tucker, on the other hand, Chris Tucker in The Fifth Element? Are you kidding me with Chris Tucker? He was awesome. All right. I've heard lots of people who have talked about The Fifth Element and they talk about, oh yeah, I love The Fifth Element. Well, except for Chris Tucker. Like, no, Chris Tucker was one of the best parts of that movie. He was really, really good. The whole point is it was a parody of a particular trend in pop culture at the time, which is not necessarily, hasn't gone away. It's different now, but it's the same kind of trend that, these really what we would consider, what an older generation would consider an effeminate or less manly sort of figure, somehow is coming across to kids today or to the modern audience, coming across as this overpowering sex symbol, even though, we're looking at it going, but he's ludicrous. He's foppish. That's just silly. How can anyone find that sexy? Much like, Prince. When Prince first came out with Purple Rain, Prince was this tiny, very effeminate, I mean, effeminate, except for his little cheesy mustache, but very effeminate at the time, sort of character, and yet just oozed sex, all sorts of sex appeal. And it was Chris Tucker's character, Ruby Rod. Ruby Rod, like even the name. Ruby Rod was a play on that, carry that out into the future. What is your logical extreme to this? Where's the end point? And the end point is Ruby Rod, this guy who is so completely over the top, completely crazy that there's no way. And yet women, because the culture has told them that this is what's hot, women swoon for Ruby Rod. Ruby Rod is getting play all over the place. And I love Ruby Rod in this movie. And then of course, when the chips are down, when the action all starts crashing in, Ruby Rod, of course, completely falls to pieces. While our stoic Bruce Willis, being Bruce Willis, saves the day and casually wipes out the enemies, with a flick of his wrist, as it were. And I love Chris Tucker in Fifth Element. I think the Ruby Rod character was perfectly placed in that movie, perfectly played. I really enjoyed it. But Gary Oldman, definitely, off the top of my head and only copying the answer you already gave me, Jeff, clearly worst role in a good movie. You suggested Costner's Robin Hood. I didn't think Robin Hood was that great. Keanu in Dracula, strangely, when Dracula came out, I was really disappointed in it. And not just because of Keanu. It didn't thrill me the way I was really hoping it would. I thought it was going to be this huge spectacular, and it just didn't work for me. So anyway, go Ruby Rod.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
Oh, how I miss GLaDOS's voice. That was so great. This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Weezer's in the Garage, and which other ones did I use? That was it. Weezer's in the Garage, and maybe something for the down the rabbit hole. I haven't picked a song out yet. I gotta figure out something. All of these songs, or all one of them, are available on iTunes. Check them out. Buy them. Enjoy them. I wouldn't include them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes and write us a nice review. No one ever has yet, but you could be the first. Or check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Stop at Facebook, click the like button. It's just 9 seconds out of your day. Come on, how tough is that? Don't forget to check out all the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others. All free, all the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, and I promise I will actually respond to you. But to be totally honest, the best way to talk to me, come sign up for the forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up, you send me a message, we'll hang out, we'll have fun. One more R2 to close us out. 49 from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, if you were a D&D character, what would your stats be? Oh, stat yourself. I wish I had a link to it, but my brother created a stat yourself quiz on one of those sites. I can't remember the name of it anymore. But he created a stat yourself quiz that will, you answer a whole series of questions and it will give you your D&D stats pretty accurately. Always worked really well for me, but, not having access to that right off. Let me stat myself really, really honestly. Are you ready? Strength. I've looked at the strength charts and I can lift about an average amount. I will give myself a 10. Dexterity. I am not really coordinated. My hand-eye coordination is not bad, my video games, but my skill at that has really kind of dropped off. And while I can juggle and I can spin plates and I can do a few fancy tricks, those are learned skills. My overall dexterity, not great. 9? 10? I mean, average or a little below average. Maybe. Constitution. I just had a physical. And the doctor says that I am in perfectly good health. My cholesterol is at the right level. My blood pressure is at the right level. Everything is going really well. But I only get that by taking several medications to help balance all that out. My thyroid's way off, and I have to take that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm also really, really fat and out of shape. So, I mean, not really fat, but, yeah, really fat. So my constitution, 9. 9, maybe 10 or 11, maybe. Average, maybe a little bit below. Nah, not much. Let's see. Intelligence. Okay, this is the one where I shine. I have always been bright. I know a lot of things. I did really well in school. I pick up on things kind of quick. Based on my IQ score, which I only vaguely know what my IQ score is because my mom would never tell me, but kind of there were some things that hinted at it. I'm going to put myself at a 13. I'd like to say 14. I want to, you know what? I'm just going to say 14, even though that's maybe a little high. But yeah, I want that +2 bonus for intelligence. It'll give me an extra language, extra skills. You know what? I'm going to go 14. Screw you guys. It's probably 13, but I'm going to go 14 anyway because I don't care. Wisdom, 8. I have no common sense. Although, yeah, my wisdom has improved. When I was in high school, when I was in college, my first few years of marriage, coming out of college, I would have put my wisdom at 7 or 8 right about then. But I think I have improved over the years. And I think if you go look at the aging, process in D&D and Pathfinder, I think you get a wisdom bonus as you get older. And I think that's true. I think I now have a little more common sense, a little more, standard know-how of how the world works. So you know what? Maybe I'll bump my wisdom up to a 10, maybe 9. So average, maybe a little below average. And then charisma. Charisma, I would like to think that I'm charismatic but here's the problem. Everybody in the world thinks that they have a good sense of humor. Everybody in the world thinks that they are personable. Everybody in the world thinks that they get along with everybody. And clearly, they're not all right. So I have to assume that I'm probably fooling myself. But for my charisma, look, I do have some leadership skill. I do have this natural propensity to put myself out there, and I'm running a podcast. I have some people who like me. I want to give myself a 12. That may be shooting a little high. Maybe it's 11, but 11 to 12 for the charisma. Slightly above average, but not anything to speak of. I think that's fair. You know what? Maybe 11. You know what? Tell you what. I'm going to go 10, 11 across the board, except for, let's bump wisdom down to a 9, dexterity down to a 9. Okay, you know what? All right, here we go. Let's start from the beginning. Ready? Stat myself. Strength, 10. Dexterity, 9. Constitution, 10. Intelligence, 13. Wisdom, 9. Charisma. Oh, God, this is so tough. 11. I want the 12. I really do. But, maybe I'm thinking too much of myself. So grand total, my character has total bonuses of -1. That's a really lame -1 character. But that's what the roll of the dice gave me. So there you go. All right. Well, I guess there isn't anything else. I'm done!